Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing fine, thank you. Congratulations to us on making it to the 21st episode of A Waste of Time with It's the Real.
Yeah, now we can legally drink.
Let's do it.
All right.
All right. So I'm telling you, Jeff, that you have to rate, review, and subscribe to A Waste of Time with It's the Real, not only on iTunes, but also on SoundCloud.
Oh, on both?
On both.
All right.
Okay.
We have some good episodes I feel like people might enjoy.
Like what?
We have Joe Budden from last week talking about Monopoly. We have Joe Mandy talking about Gucci Mane. And we have JoJo talking about JoJo.
Just lots of Joes.
Yeah.
This is like that Caseley track where it was like all Joes.
Yeah,
what was it called?
Not Your Average Joe.
Not Your Average Joe with Fat Joe and Joe Budden and the singer Joe.
Yeah. All right. Well, we should talk about that sometime, but for now, let's get into this podcast with Bun B.
When do you want to start it?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Newsstands and Bylines, a.k.a. Magazines and Clips. Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Bad Friend, Good Lover, a.k.a. The Backstabber.
Yo, this Bun B, a.k.a. The Trilogy, a.k.a. Bobby Ewan, a.k.a. Yo, baby mama's baby dad.
Yeah, and this is a waste of time with This The Real.
Chick, chick, boom. That was a shotgun.
Bun.
You know, you guys like automatics.
No, it's true.
I'm a Texan.
You're
I brought a shotgun.
Guy, yeah.
I brought a shotgun. Very typical.
Thank you for coming to the Upper West Side for this.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Oh, okay.
That's the silverware.
Yeah. We
I
made
feel like
you,
this is like War of the Worlds. Like, just like.
We made, we roasted a chicken and we got couscous and onions and carrots and celery and sweet potatoes and red peppers, the latter of which you are not going to even touch.
No, I'm going to save that for my good friend Charles. Yeah. As you can tell, I'm not a vegetable guy. Meat and potatoes.
But you're back in the city because the last time we saw you, by the way.
Oh, man.
We brought you up with us.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
For the Yolono tour. Two shows, one night at the Ganzevoort, so thus it's a tour. And
yeah, it was an amazing tour, by the way, I have to
thank
say.
You. Yeah. Yes. We're just glad that you were there for the last show.
No, I mean, we closed out with a bang, I think. You know, having the band there was a great addition.
Mm-hmm.
Having me there was an incredible addition.
It was a big to-do, obviously, to put on the Yolono tour. A lot of it fell onto Jeff's and my shoulders, including the planning of getting you certain places, setting up the audio equipment, and then Greg Mayo, who ran the band, like, that was a lot on him. There was a concern that you would fly in at a certain time, and would you be there when we were going to hit, you know, and start right. Girls of the Dirty Souths, the song you're on of ours. And our brother Dan was coordinating.
Right. Dan was running for everything.
Yeah, which he did a very good job, I might ask.
Yeah, well, he has a real job, so he has, like, real responsibilities.
And he was wearing a suit, so he looked official.
People thought that he was our manager.
Thought he was, too.
You came in basically on time.
Basically on time.
And then Dan gave you a 15-minute heads up. You were staying in the Ganzevoort. So Dan was like, oh, should I...
in my head as if people could hear that.
Dan was like, oh, should I have given him, like, a buffer? Should I have, like, sort of told him maybe 20 minutes or, you know, something to sort of get him down on time? Bun, at, like, 14 minutes and 59 seconds, steps off the elevator. Dan was like, whoa. And so we're on stage. We started up the song, go through my verse.
And then we look to our right and we see you... Periscoping.
Yep.
About to miss your cue, but then somehow you ended it right on time and came right on stage.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I was like, is Bun really going to come to New York for this one thing, miss the cue? And you, I mean, clearly, this is what you've done for a couple of decades.
I've done it a few times.
Yeah. And flawless. Flawless. It was unbelievable.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm really good. And when you're as good as I am, you know, it's just kind of hard to fuck shit up. So even though I could have even been purposely trying to miss my cue, right? But I'm just so good that my, I guess for lack of a better term, innate goodness, right?
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Mm-hmm. Right, you were like, it was a bit.
It doesn't allow me, right, to drop the ball.
You really didn't.
You know, and I mean, I was stuck in traffic on my way here to do this interview.
Mm-hmm.
Really thought we were going to get here late.
Nope.
And a goodness kicks in again, right? Transfers to the Uber driver as well. All of a sudden, he's good as shit. He's never been good before, right?
Because
he's an Uber driver.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So now, boom, he's got it. We're all good.
And
Charles
now,
is there. Charles is, he's going to have these vegetables in a minute.
Yep.
And he'll be good.
So did you give him a 5 stars?
No.
You could have upped his rating up to like a 1.3 or something.
I'm going to give him 2 stars.
I feel like you're almost like the Pope. You just sort of like bless people as you... move
pass
from
by,
yeah, person to person.
All I'm missing is a Fiat, ladies and gentlemen.
You would not push a Fiat.
I would. I'd push the Gucci Fiat.
Oh, all right.
That little fucker.
Fair. Right? Would you? Would you push a Tesla?
Yes, actually, I Tesla's got an SUV.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I just saw.
I think it's there. A test UV.
Mm-hmm.
Do they?
Well done.
Thank you.
Do they have dealerships down in Houston?
Yeah, they have one actually in the middle of Galleria Mall.
Whoa.
So I've been intrigued by it, and then a good friend of mine, Carter, which is interesting side note, Carter's family owns Kettle Brand Chips.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
Wait, can we get a hookup?
I mean, I can get you a bag of jalapenos. That's about as much as I could do. But Carter works with Tesla, so they actually brought Teslas on. They brought Teslas on Gumball for the last 2 years.
That's cool.
But it gets, like, they have to take a very specific route because there aren't as many chargers in Europe as there are here. So
but, it gets like... Yeah, I guess you can't, like, siphon electricity from people yet.
It's not going to happen. There's no Mophie yet for a Tesla.
Right.
All right, so we want to talk about basically everything.
Okay.
I want to start off with your very beginnings, not just with UGK, but you were basically signed to Cash Money.
Well, not signed. I was getting money from them, which is very hard to do.
Yeah.
But I was literally one of the only artists outside of the artist signed to the label that they actually even did music with.
Yeah.
I was there. I was at the actual show where it was UGK, Too Short, UNLV, which is mm-hmm. one of the earlier groups from mm-hmm. Cash Money Records,
yep.
and Manny Fresh's first group, which was Manny Fresh and Gregory D.
Yep.
So they were all there at the show, and that was the actual day where Baby and Manny sat and talked about him coming to do music
wow.
with them.
To be like the in-house producer. Like the
well, just
producer.
Come in like we want to get some beats from you.
Yeah.
And then from that meeting, Manny Fresh
You saw
became,
that happen.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah. I mean, I've been there
greatness.
Since the beginning. I met Baby right when he came out of prison. He was a rapper. He was actually the first rapper on Cash Money Records.
Right. He was B32.
I thought it was B23.
Mm-mm.
Is it B32?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because B32 is the vitamin that they cut dope with.
Oh, I thought it was because he said that he had 32 gold teeth.
No. No. But
be clear.
Maybe both of it. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, that's what he publicly
yeah, and,
said.
Well, and Eazy-E got an inheritance and started NWA. Mm-hmm. But the movie tells us different now.
Right.
I didn't see the funeral.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see the dead uncle.
But by the way, we saw you at the New York screening for that.
Yo, so when the fucking movie stopped and... The goddamn screen went up, and mm-hmm, motherfuckers was mm-hmm. just sitting there.
Yep.
Like, I knew there was going to be a Q&A, and yet I was not prepared for that, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just like you're watching the NWA movie, right? And you know after the movie, there's going to be a Q&A,
right,
with people from the movie. But yep. literally, the movie finishes, the credits roll, and then the fucking screen that you're watching the movie on mm-hmm. goes up, and then there's Ice Cube and F. Gary Gray and all these kids.
And Yo-Yo.
And, was it Yo-Yo?
No, it was MC Light.
MC Light. I'm sorry.
MC Light.
But it was just like Disney's Hall of Presidents.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
But the kid that plays, I feel like the kid that plays Eazy-E is a fucking star.
Oh, yeah,
for
right?
sure.
With no disrespect to the guy that played Dre, he's a Juilliard actor. Mm-hmm. You see him talk and hear him and see his mannerisms, he acted. Like, he has nothing in common with Dr. Dre, any of those mannerisms at all. That's all acting.
He's from, like, New Orleans.
Yeah, and Cube's son, I mean, literally had his whole life to prepare for that role.
Sure.
But, yeah, the guy that played Eazy-E, man, that dude, I think his name is Jason, if I'm not mistaken. That
he was great.
The kid's a star.
And you asked one of the first questions at that Q&A.
Yeah, I had to ask a question after Michael Eric Dyson yeah. did a whole fucking diatribe of like, yeah, like wasn't even a question. He just talked at him
right.
for like 5 minutes. And then like, okay, here, Bun, extra superficial surface ass question.
Well, you're both professors, so.
Yeah, I mean.
And you shouted out your wife. So, I mean, you know.
It was a good, all in all, a good night.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, points. I mean, I thought it was ill, though, that they like, you know, if you looked at all the pivotal scenes, like with every one of them where they came to these grand awakenings about their situations, it was with their wives. And
sure.
I think that's a very real thing for most people, right? Especially, like, I know in the entertainment business, for a lot of guys, it's the wives that are usually like, I know that's your friend. I know you like that guy. I know you guys get along. I don't trust him. I think something's up, and you need to watch your back about that,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I like to think I'm a good judge of character. So for a long
Wait,
time,
then why
a lot
are you
of times,
here?
Present company excluded.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I thought. The key word being thought.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then. And then my wife had to open my eyes about a couple of things, and he ex out a couple of friends, and then you realize that, you know, your wife's your best friend, and you're good money.
Mm-hmm. So, back to Cash Money.
Let's do this.
Good money to Cash Money.
How do we get there? Yeah, so, yeah, I made good money with Cash Money, but, no, I was never really signed, and everybody wanted to sign me at some point. Like, well, me and Chad, for that matter. So, we got offers from everybody. But Chad was always like, I'd rather be number one on my ship than be number eight or somebody. Because it's like, okay, we go to Cash Money. We come after all of them, all the solo artists in the group. So we're like seventh on the roster. If we go to No Limit, we're like 12th on the roster. You know, if we go to Rockefeller, we're sixth on the roster. If we go to Bad Boy, God, we're maybe 15th on the roster at that point. So we had offers from every record company.
Yeah.
To Wait, buy out even our Rockefeller?
Contract. Yeah.
I mean, like, I had never heard. I mean, I knew that you recorded the verse for him, for Jay, but, like, I didn't realize that you had meetings.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it wasn't a meeting. It was like, you know, if y'all want to get out of that deal, you know, let us know.
Mm-hmm. And they were pretty good at getting people out of their deals.
Yeah, so. Puffy as well. I mean, it was seven-figure offers from pretty much every record company out there.
So, but back in the early days, the truth of the matter is, essentially, you guys were regional, right? And super regional.
Yeah, absolutely.
But what was it about these New Orleans guys that appealed to you?
I just liked New Orleans as a city, right? I had a lot of friends from New Orleans, and I just liked how New Orleans regulated itself. You know, New Orleans is one of the most crooked cities on the planet, not just in America, on the planet, right? So there's some very weird systems in place in the city council aspect, the police aspect, and then these all these different neighborhoods and wards and these projects. So you just got to know how to move around and who to move with. And it was always interesting to be able to do that, you know, in any city, right?
Right.
I used to love to come to New York and get in a car with Keith Murray and go uptown. Or get in the car with Nori and go to Queensbridge, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That shit, because everybody don't get to do that shit, right? And I'm in Queensbridge at 2, 3 in the morning, getting fucked up with Nori out on the block, watching people get beat up, all kind of shit.
Yeah.
Like, I was loving it, right? Everybody doesn't get that access, right?
Sure.
And I try to offer, so that's when I start trying to offer that access to my city. So you hear people talking about they came to Houston, I pick them up, I take them to Frenchies, I ride them through Fifth Ward, Third Ward, all that type of shit. And that type of shit, I think it's important, man, you know, but yeah, we had a lot of different offers from a lot of people, but I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we didn't really want to, a lot of them were our friends and we didn't want to work for our friends.
Right.
Right.
You don't want to work for your friends.
So you spent a lot of time, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say that Pimp C, you know, didn't have too many friends in the industry.
Oh, he had a lot of friends in the industry. It was just certain people, he was just very bluntly honest about lot of things.
I think that a lot of people thought that Pimp C was their friend, but he himself may not have.
I think that's fair. I guess on any given day, you could feel a certain way, right? And that was basically Chad in a nutshell. Like, on any given day, we could be going anywhere with this shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it just felt kind of how he woke up in the morning. But he felt...
It is nice that he divorced his own views from, like, being like, you know, this is me. This is not Buns. This is not UGK.
Yeah, because it becomes a different situation if it's my view, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be a different situation if I'm involved, right? Because I'm very quiet.
Well,
right?
Yeah.
I'm not a...
Do you feel like you cleaned up a bunch of things that maybe were started by people that weren't...
I wouldn't say cleaned up, per se, but there were things that maybe he started and I kind of had to... I wouldn't say finish, but... Look, nobody wanted to... Really, really wanted to have a problem with me, I guess, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know how to handle that kind of shit. I'm not really good at beef, so I tend to overdo it.
Mm-hmm.
So people don't really want to go there because I'm not gonna stop. And besides that, like, I love these guys, right? We had real beef with guys that were really, really good friends of mine, you know? And that kind of was the center of a lot of the beefs, right? Like, a lot of lines were drawn in the sand for me. Mm-hmm. And then I had to ride with my brother. That's just how that is, you know? And it's just always weird when that shit is going on, you know?
Yeah,
when
you're
in the middle of that shit.
Well, okay, so when something like 50 and Ja Rule happens.
Who was a big fan of everything, by the way. Called me and was like, yo, tell Pimp, don't stop, please. Like, he's killing it right now. Just
That's pretty awesome.
I was like, please stop, 50.
I know.
not now.
But, like, so 50 and Ja go after each other, right? And then that sort of... That goes into that next wave where Jadakiss or Fat Joe become involved on a very, like, sort of outsider position.
Yeah.
Do you understand that thinking from 50's side? Are you like, okay, like, if someone goes at him, whoever's attached to him gets it as well?
Yeah.
Like, black and white.
Yeah. No, wow. That's when you're... when you're thinking like he thinks, and 50 thinks in terms of war.
Yeah.
Right. He thinks it's all strategy.
Yeah.
It's all strategy for him. So he has to address it like that, right? It doesn't work if you don't give 100% over to the process, right? It doesn't work unless you really antagonize these people and take them out of their comfort zone, right?
And the people attached, and then the people attached to
them.
Have
you read Art of War?
Who, me?
Yeah.
I wrote Art of War.
Woo! Oh, shit.
Woo!
You lived Art of War.
I haven't had a record deal in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
We're good. Nah, but it's, you know, I've been very, very smart and calculated about this stuff because Chad was all emotion, right? He was all emotion. So I had to be all logic. I had to be in order for this shit to balance out. Because and that's why I say I had to, I couldn't get involved because if I get involved, then it's all emotion.
Right.
And we're all out. And then if they touch my brother, then we're really all out.
So, yeah.
And I mean, some of these things got, you know, some of these things got way deeper than people even knew about because at a certain point, there's nothing to talk about. Like we're out here in these streets. It's a very real thing, and you have to worry about family and like how does my wife move around? How's my kids move around? Because you don't really know what people will go to.
Yeah.
Wait, that late in the game, people were coming at you like
I wouldn't say late in the game. No,
I mean,
but
like when you had like family and stuff.
Well, I've had family my whole. You know, I've always had.
Oh, true.
Family.
Yeah.
I'm old, dude. I've been here. I'm so old. But no, but I mean, it gets. I mean, for me, I never planned that way, and I don't know if other guys plan that way, but this is how you have to move in these situations, right? You just have to prepare these things these kind of ways. So everything changes, the whole way we carry our lives and everything. For me, anyway, I take this type of shit very serious. And people who say they want to hurt me or my family or anybody that I love, then I just, all that ki-ki-ki Uncle Bun shit shuts down, and it's like, all right, this is how we move, and this is what's up. And if you don't know them, touch them.
Yeah.
Just that simple. If you don't know who it is, they get within it, just touch them. Fuck that.
Yeah.
So UGK starts up, originally Pimp C and Big Mitch.
Yeah. Big Smoking Mitch.
Yes. And so Big Smoking Mitch ends up on your second album, I think, rapping.
What song is... might have been... Is it Super Tight? Yeah, I think it is Super Tight.
And then you had your own duo.
Might have been a little later. Yeah, I had a duo with my guy Jalon.
Yeah, and so I know you're still friends with...
I'm still friends with everybody.
Yeah, but I meant on Facebook, I see you're friends with Big Smoke and Mitch. I did my That's research.
Funny.
Yeah,
that's funny.
But I was wondering what happened to Jalon.
Jalon's still around. If I'm not mistaken, he's back in Port Arthur. I just missed him. I went out there. I was looking for him at the reunion. We have a big like town reunion. We have like schools that don't exist anymore, high schools that don't exist anymore, so... Their class reunions all coincide with the new, so everybody just kind of get together in one fucking park, and so it's like class of 60 to 80 from this school, and then 80 to 2000 of that school, and all these fucking different things. And so that's where you go if you want to see people that you haven't seen from Port Arthur in a while. But I had to go at a certain time and come back at a certain time because I had a show, so I didn't catch him that time. But he's still there. I saw his little brother.
Do you still have unconditional love for Port Arthur?
Without question.
Yeah.
My mom's still there. A lot of my family is there. A lot of my mother's side of the family still lives in Port Arthur. And like some of my closest and oldest friends, you know, from school and growing up, they're still there. So I'll go and I see guys and all. But there's always that divide. Like I'm 42 years old. And so there's, you know, the younger kids, they're not they didn't get to see it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, their whole thing is like, we want to be a part of it, you know, because we weren't here.
Right.
We didn't see it. We were babies, some of them weren't even born. So there's friction from up and coming artists to just we want to be a part of what you're doing.
They want that cosign.
Well, yeah, I mean, but they think they're just supposed to get it, and everybody's got to earn it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But we got some great talent in Port Arthur, GP, the whole 4 or 5 movement right now. Some young kids out of PA, they're doing great jobs. So I'm trying to find a way to support it in a real way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you do it because you feel you're obligated, then more and more obligations will be thrown upon you. So we got to make sure that if we do it, it's in a real way. But I want to help these kids. I know how hard it is, but then you can't just give everybody everything. There's got to be some work ethic. They got to get out there and figure out how to scratch for.
You know, Eric and I have been with you in Houston. You took us to a
Breakfast Club,
which was amazing. But, you know, sitting at a table with you, and everybody seemed to think that we were record executives because we're white people sitting with you at a table. And so all these people just kept coming up to you and coming up to you, being like, yo, I really appreciate everything you've done, but also here's my mixtape, or like, I'm really doing stuff, you should, you know, come. And so I wonder, is that overwhelming, or is that like...
That comes with the job, right? There's really nothing you could do about that. The demo has always existed in hip-hop. Shout out to Premium Pete calling me right now.
He's trying to get you on Combat Jack right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I told him I was coming to rock with y'all, and he was like Podcast Wars. Like, tell the brothers it's on site.
Yo, Pete's our guy.
But, yeah, especially if you need some J's, Pete's everybody's guy. Yeah, it comes with the job. There's nothing you could really do. I mean, there's things you could do about it, right? Like, people always want to... Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, right? People always want pictures. People want autographs. People want to ask a question. People want, basically, a moment of your time, and they want to invade your personal space. And they always start with, I don't want to be that guy, right. Or I don't want to come off on some groupie shit, or I know you're chilling right now and probably don't want to be bothered, and all that shit comes with a but.
Yeah.
You know? And... You know, like, as long as I'm not eating with my family,
right.
I'm good, you know, to talk to people about that. But, like, I tell these guys all the time, like I'll give you a great story. I went to Atlanta for Music Midtown Music Festival a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So on the way to the, inside the festival, there's some kids out front. They're selling water. Like, when you go to a lot of these things, there's always somebody selling water.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So but I'm staying at the hotel right by the entrance. I'm going across the street to get something to eat. And they see me, and they're like, yo, Bumby, we're artists, you know? You know, what's up? You know, I'm like, so I look at them. I'm like, so you came to the front doors of one of the biggest music festivals in America, and you brought water, you know? Like, so you got to make a decision whether you want to be rich or you want to be famous,
right?
Because you're out here to get money, and I get that. But you're not out here to get money with what you're trying to tell me is your dream.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to figure out what you want, right? If you want, you either want money or you want to be known.
Exactly. Did you want water?
I didn't want water. I tend to stay very hydrated. Cheers.
Yeah. Can we talk about Atlanta a little bit?
Sure.
When was the first time you met Outkast?
That's a good question. I want to say at Southern University, there was a homecoming show.
Mm-hmm. Were they selling water?
No. But it was funny. Andre had a pack of incense in his back pocket. I'll never forget that.
Of course.
Like the... What were they called? Like the Kona sticks? Is that what they were called? The gold shit.
I don't know.
You guys don't smoke weed, right? Why did I even bring it? I brought like more weed than a little bit for no reason. But so they were there, and they went on right before we did. And so we talked to them in their little in-between time between their set and our set. And while we're talking, they come up and they say, you guys are next. Here's the mics. Oh, yeah, it's clean show. You can't curse. And so we got on stage, and we lasted about 60 seconds. And they pulled the plug, and they called. I mean, but we literally got up there, and... This is in the early years of UGK, and we were starting the shows with Cocaine in the Back of the Ride.
Mm-hmm.
So the first lines are like, Pimp C, bitch, so what the fuck is up? And we literally walk out there, and he's saying that line, I swear to God. And I saw an 8-year-old kid, couldn't have been more than 8, and just the eyes opening and the mouth dropping. And you can tell the whole fucking front 2 rows are booster.
Oh.
It's the entire, everything from 2 rows back all look the same.
Yeah.
And then the first 2 rows look the same, but neither one of them looked alike.
This is the last time that UGK ever went on the campus of Southern.
Absolutely. I've driven by many times in the city of Baton Rouge, but there's a big sign out front.
You're with grambling, my face, man, really. On it.
I might as well have shoplifted because I'm not allowed inside the university anymore.
Pimp C taught that 8-year-old kid about life.
I know.
Basically. I would love to know where that kid is now.
So
probably Bobby Jindal.
Did you know Outkast music?
Yes. No.
How does that like get across down to Texas?
I mean, just music in general. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they started out talking about players ball and shit like that and riding Cadillacs. I mean, you had me at balls. Yeah. But But no, I mean, the funny thing used to be that everybody thought we all already knew each other. Mm-hmm. Like, everywhere I would go, people would be like, yo, what's A-Ball and MJG up to? I have no idea. They were like, actually, out of all the Southern rap groups, like 3-6 Mafia, yeah. Outkast, they were the last ones we met. Like, for some reason, UGK and A-Ball and MJG both dropped in 92.
Right.
Probably didn't meet till 97.
Never crossed paths?
Never booked at the same show.
Wow.
Never at the same place at the same time.
Were you ever in Memphis?
Ever. Yeah, but they were never there.
That's like, inconvenient.
I would see Gangsta Pad. I would see Skinny Pimp. Mm-hmm. I see Paul and Juicy. I would see everybody. Never saw them because they were on the road like we were.
Yeah, so, just opposite.
Yeah, I mean, it was literally like we would go in the city and either they were there next weekend or they had just left.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, and for years.
That's nuts.
For years. And then finally, I can't remember where we met, but it was like, fine, because we're
That's so weird.
There's an argument, right, as to how akin UGK and A-Ball MJG are.
Okay.
Despite the fact that they don't produce.
Two of them, two of you, yep.
The only difference is they don't produce,
mm-hmm.
right? So with that, we're probably closer akin and to like a. I always fashioned us UGK as like an EPMD.
Okay, yeah.
I've always kind of seen us like an EPMD kind of group, you know?
Did either of you jump out of a window?
I jumped off of a balcony into a pool before.
Did you really?
Yeah.
On some like almost famous shit?
Like on some almost dead shit.
Oh, so like more like The Simpsons where Bart like misses the pool.
No, I made it in the pool, but like it did not seem like I was gonna, for a second it looked like the knees were gonna just all concrete, all concrete.
But you made it.
By the grace of God. I'll tell you guys about God later. But when, no, Atlanta was great. I actually lived in Atlanta previously, well, prior to the Olympics. So I remember old Atlanta.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
As opposed to new Atlanta.
Sure. And now there's a newer Atlanta. Now the Braves are moving into the suburbs.
It is the newest Atlanta you could possibly
new, see. New even. Yeah. But so Pimp C was living in Atlanta too, around like 96 or so, right?
Well, I moved in Atlanta in 95. Mm-hmm. And then I came back. And then Pimp moved up. Maybe around 97
okay,
or so, 98, because we're in Atlanta during Dirty Money time, Big mm-hmm. Pimpin' and all of that mm-hmm. kind of stuff.
You were there for Freaknik.
Yeah, yes, I lived in Atlanta.
Someone who looked like you was there for Freaknik, yeah.
It was, Freaknik was so it, like, I've been to Black Bike Weekend,
mm-hmm.
I've been, you know, Howard University, I've been all the weekends, right? Yep. Nothing was ever like Freaknik. I remember I'm standing on the corner in front of the hotel in downtown Atlanta, and I see a van pulling up to the corner, and the doors open on the van, and they two dudes get out, and they put two chicks on top of the van, and they say, if you throw enough money, the chicks will get naked. So guys just start throwing money like in the street. It's like 2:30 in the afternoon. Chicks get naked, dance on top of the van. They get the money. They put the money in the van. They put the chicks in the van, and they drive to the next corner. and it's because it's just dead stop traffic.
Yeah.
And so these guys just went corner to corner with a mobile strip show.
Was the van wrapped?
Never been duped. Nope. That shit was like a fucking white fucking dropping off carpeting van. Never been duplicated. Mobile strip club.
Did you see any 8-year-olds on the corner?
I didn't. See, even he got tickled by that.
When was the first time you met?
I told you they're actually funny.
When was that?
Not just funny looking. Funny.
When was the first time you met Tip?
I met Tip. I just remember Tip coming up to me and saying, big homie, I got a studio with my girl. Me and my girl got a studio. And if you ever need to lay some shit, let me know. This was during the trap. Was it trap music mixtapes? Not the trap music album. Huh?
I'm Serious?
No, this was after I'm Serious. Mm-hmm. He was doing mixtapes for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
And he and Tiny had just gotten together because mm-hmm. Tiny had the studio with her and Candy with Shakespeare from all the songwriting and shit that they were doing. So he was like, anytime you're up here, let me know. But I remember we did our first, I guess, real sitting and talking would have been the Reaction remix.
Mm.
And the whole...
For Killer Mike.
Yeah, and the whole point of them was like... You're not going to out-rap me. And guys, that's what guys love to come and tell me. Like, you know, I know you be killing motherfuckers on this record, OG, but you're not finna get me. And then I get on there and I get them. Well, like, you can't win with me because you're either going to underestimate or overestimate.
Innate greatness.
So
goodness,
there's probably not a
this probably not overstating it.
There's probably not a definitive way that you record every time, but if you have your chance, are you looking to record first or last? If there's like, let's say, three
clean
people.
Up. I bet clean up.
Oh, all right. So T.I. offers you an opportunity to record at his place. Did you see sort of the heights that he would hit?
I just knew that this dude was very persistent. I remember seeing that before, right? I remember when Pimp First was, when we were like trying to decide what we wanted to do, I knew he was going to make a record, right? I wasn't sure about me, mm-hmm. but I knew that guy,
yep.
Pimp, was going to make a record.
Right.
So I just decided, you know what? I'm just going to stand next to you forever, and I'll just be there when that shit happens.
Right.
I underestimated my contribution, sure. what my contribution would be at the time. But that's how I felt about Tip. I was like, you put that album out. Like, we know you can rap. We put that album out, did a single with Beanie Man. That was not the way to go at all. But you can rap your ass off. And you're not finna quit, right? Like, there's no quit that I saw in him. So eventually, he's going to work this shit out. Mm-hmm. And the mixtapes is where they worked that shit out.
Yeah.
And then trap music was like the culmination of actually really finding that voice and his place.
Yeah.
But I will say he's always talked like that. I will say that he has always talked like that.
Has he always danced like that?
He didn't dance.
The old man.
He didn't dance previously, yeah. but then when he started dancing, probably around when Lil Roscoe started coming around, he felt more comfortable about it. And it's just awkward to see grown men dance. For me, by themselves, right? Mm-hmm. Like, just in the middle of a stage, right? Sure. Just, like, by themselves with no real motivation other than dance, dog. Just dance. But that should be live if you dance right now. And so, yeah.
Says the guy who danced with Solange Knowles.
No, but once again, it's not it's
but
not.
I
just
wasn't by myself.
Himself.
That was a choreographed routine. We were in King's Flea Market. They closed the flea market down for the day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's me, Solange, and Manny Fresh in the flea market.
What? I didn't know Manny was there.
Manny's in the video too. Manny,
I don't remember him.
I don't remember that. Yeah,
I think see, you know what? No, and Manny danced too, but Manny's not. Manny's is cut.
Oh man.
So Manny, yeah, Manny danced too. So that was the whole thing was supposed to be like a dream, right?
Mm,
like
yeah,
this
yeah.
flea market dream ghetto sequence or whatever ghetto dream sequence, excuse me. And so yeah, that's what it was. It was just me by the rims, like doing a two-step.
Yeah.
And Manny was behind the jury case. So if you go back and look at that video, Manny Fresh is behind the jury case. But there was a part where he was supposed to come out and dance and stuff.
Can Manny dance?
Manny can dance. Manny's from New Orleans. Manny's old school. Like, mm-hmm. Manny's an old school party guy, right? Mm-hmm. From those days when the DJ wasn't just a, like, Manny comes from a generation where the DJ was the DJ and the hype man, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how a lot of New Orleans parties roll. Like, you know, the DJ has to be a little bit. Now, dude, so. And he's kind of doing it too, right? So, but Manny's like a very, very fun human being to be around.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, he really.
He is one of the most genuine people I know. Manny has never put on a mask in front of me for any reason. He's always been as transparent as he could be, and I just love him for it.
That's awesome.
And he's always had the best polos. Like, to say he wasn't from Brooklyn, you know, and he didn't hang out with Mayhem and all those guys.
Yeah, yeah.
His polo. It's just been awesome to watch.
All Maddie USPA.
All of it. Y'all kill me with that USPA shit. Yo. That's a knife in the gut every time y'all say that shit. I remember those days. I wore USPA, and I did not have the best upbringing. I had USPA and Payless shoes and all of that kind of stuff.
Wow. Yeah. How well do you
know? And now I get free Crooks. And
yeah.
All that shit. I bodied it.
How well do you know Young Dro?
I know Young Dro very well.
Yeah. Like, so he came up here, and he's, first of all, a great guy, and told us that he spent how much?
$5 million.
$5 million on polo. $5 million on polo. Like, that is a true.
Yeah, I feel like at a certain point, you've got to get a sponsorship.
Yeah.
Like,
no, it's not even on the radar.
Oh, not even on the radar?
If I'm talking about with Ralph Lauren, you wouldn't be on the radar for that. Spending $5 million doesn't matter to Ralph. Rather, you don't even never register. But I totally believe that.
Yeah.
I totally believe that. I believe also that Young Dro probably owns more orange than any other black man in America. I mean, I'm sure at one point we all wore orange.
I'm just
not like Young Dro.
I never wore
an orange polo hat with an orange polo shirt with some orange polo shorts with some orange polo socks with white shoes.
He owns orange. That's it.
That's it. That's his color. Cam's got pink. He's got orange. That's And Jay-Z's got blue.
Yeah, Jay-Z blue. Can you talk about another supremely confident person and whether you saw the heights he would go to, Kanye West?
So many, many years ago, I recorded with a group called Czarnok. C-Z-A-R-N-O-K.
What?
Are they from America?
Yes. Yes, they are. There's a whole thing about the... You just got to Google the group. But... I recorded a song with them called I Would Never Tell. And they were like, yo, the kid that did this song is crazy. He's got some amazing music. If you want one of these tracks, I will give you one because this dude is so dope.
Czarnok was your connect.
And I was like, I'll listen to it. But I was like, I'm good on it. Because it was really, we're trying to parlay it into a, instead of paying you X amount of dollars for this verse.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We'll give you one half X plus various beats from unknown artists who they're telling me in this room, this dude is going to be this shit. This dude is like really good. And I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. I'm going to need that money. Worst mistake I ever made in my life.
This is the whole water versus, you know.
And if you go, matter of fact, we're going to Google this right now live on the show just so you guys can hear. And the minute this song comes on, you're going to be like, duh.
Locked down in the house, I will never tell. Don't tell on me. Kanye West on the track. Finest of the Natty. Let's do something.
About this yayo that we steal, how we moving it out in bills for 24/7 sales. And I ain't never spoke on all these brawls that I done broke. Could be walking the stroke with a stroke in a pay-per-view hofo. And I never speak on how we make these fiends geek for leaders elite. 8 days a week, it's same man a feet freak. And I never told about the work that we sold, but you know the way that made for Rick, no fold. Now that's cold. See me chat about this matter. Say, dog, what's the matter with you? We climbing up the ladder, baby, check your data. I never been quoted on how the coke got folded and blew it up until the birds get floated, but it's duly noted. You wanna chop it up about how we be shopping up, and at every black event, my bopping bras keep popping up. See, conversation run the nation, boomer silence rules the world. Don't believe me? After this, that's your girl, fool. This 100% Peruvian vanilla swirl, fool. But yo, we never speak on realness. We keep it P.I. till we D.I. It's UGK for life until it's no life. So what's your life, fool?
That was the first time hearing of Kanye.
Yeah.
Was through that. And then seeing him again through Rockefeller.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
Well, did it hit you at a certain time when you saw him in, like, the... just any of the videos? Oh, that guy. Like, I know the name.
It took me a while to put it all together that he was the guy from that beat. Yeah, it probably took till maybe 808s. And then I saw one of those guys, and they was like, man, Kanye, right? And I was like, what do you mean? You know, the dude that did the song. I was like, Kanye West did the song that we did together. It was like, that's the dude who beats we was trying to give you. Chin on floor.
Yeah.
You met the guys from Czarnok.
Czarnok.
Czarnok. Excuse me.
You love that name, don't you?
I that is the opposite of love.
Very easily Googleable.
Yeah, that's a, you know, their SEO game is crazy. Do you know the origin of? I don't want to talk about Czarnok too much, but like, I don't want this podcast to be all about Czarnok. Mm-hmm. But do you know the origin of their name?
I know they were very heavy on pimping at that time. Like a lot of what they were talking about was pimping. So I would have to say maybe it was some space age pimping.
Okay.
Right.
Like sounds like Borat.
That's as far. That's as far as I can bring logic into the name of that group at that point. But they were good, though. I actually liked the group. I thought they would have done better.
That's cool. And then when you first met Kanye, did you have any idea that he would become anything close to what he's become? As in, like,
no, not until
he told you.
Not until I think maybe Champions.
Okay. Yep.
And then when I heard him on Champions, I'm like, oh, wait, so this dude can rap too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, this could be a problem.
Well, what do you think when College Dropout came out.
I thought it was incredible.
Right?
I really, really thought it was incredible. I thought this kid with this backpack is finna, like, fuck over a lot of dudes, right? Like, he... And the fact that he was able to create an identity in that room.
Oh, my God.
Right? With all those. I mean, if you look at the state property personalities and the Dipset personalities, right, to be able to craft an identity of his own in that room was amazing to watch. And I still think, me personally, College Dropout is the best album. I mean, there's an argument for 808. If you've ever had your heart broken, then 808 and Heartbreak.
My Dark Beautiful Fantasy.
It didn't resonate with me like that.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I liked Power.
Yep.
I still like Power. Like, that's my treadmill song.
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought the visuals attached to that album and the way he tried to present the music was, because that was when it was just him with the MP
right.
on stage, right?
Yeah.
I thought that was bold.
Sure.
I thought that was really bold. And that's kind of when the stage dynamic of Kanye started to shift, and he went from being just a musician and a performer to an entertainer.
Yeah.
And, like, I was just talking to him about, like, nobody could have done the Hollywood Bowl.
Right.
Right, like that, right? To bring that level of production in. And as much as people may have issues with Kanye, and maybe as a person, and maybe with some of his personal choices, as an artist for hip-hop culture and music culture in general, he's absolutely necessary.
Most transformative artist.
Absolutely necessary. And I think it's just so hard for people to embrace it because of how abrasive he can be sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. It's, you know, and I think people have, to be quite frank, such a strong opinion of Kim that it makes it even harder for them to swallow that pill, then take into it the way he's... I mean, but for him to just get up there and question Taylor Swift like that was just... It's amazing, right?
Yeah.
And it wasn't a gimmick.
Right.
He really, really felt that way. And it's one thing to get up there and say, God damn it, I was better. This should have been my award. But to get up there and be like, this was her award.
Yeah.
And her is like... I didn't say I had no problem. No, that's bullshit. Your shit was better and you know it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not now, you know?
Yeah.
That's bold in itself, right? To get on stage and stand up for someone else.
Right.
He doesn't really get credit for that. It was just like, how could you do that to that girl? And I understand taking the shine away from that moment, but how many people really, really have the heart and the passion to say what the fuck they feel when they feel like saying it? You can love it or hate it, but you have to respect somebody that's going to live in their opinion.
Totally.
Yeah.
You got to.
And look, 10 years passed, everyone looks at George Bush doesn't like black people in a totally different way, 180
Absolutely.
Degrees.
At first, it seemed like an arrogant statement. It seemed out of place. It seemed insensitive based on what was going on. And now everybody looks back like, I'm glad he said. If he hadn't said it, no one would ever have said it. And we probably would have let a lot of shit slide, right? Yep. So in retrospect, and it's always like that, right? Like, people used to think Pimp was crazy about stuff. Like, it's not enough substance in this music. It's about to go in a different direction if we don't be careful. And these things are starting to take form. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, it's passion, man. You have to respect people's passion because there aren't many people who really, really give a fuck about what they say they give a fuck about, right? It's easy to say it, but nobody acts, right? And it's good to just see somebody that's willing to stand by what the fuck they said, even if they knew they were batshit crazy saying it. Oh, well, you know. Like Pimp used to always say, I'm not going to apologize for what I said, but I'll apologize if it offended you the way I said it. I'm not going to take back what I said because that's how I feel. But if I offended you by saying that way, I'm sorry. But yeah. I'm not going back on it. I'm not going to bite my tongue.
Right.
You got to respect that, man. People compromise themselves all the time.
When was the first time you met Lil Wayne and how old was he? How old did he say he was?
Well, I remember. That's funny. Yeah. That's funny. Before I saw him, I heard him. Lil Wayne used to call into the Cash Money record company offices and freestyle on the voicemail. Like, just rap on the voicemail.
Yeah.
And eventually Stunner talked to his mom and was like, this kid's talented, but we don't want to do nothing without you being involved. And it was just funny for when he first came in, and like, his first they were the BGs. It was him and BG were the BGs. And for years, he wouldn't curse, right? If you go through all those Hot Boy records, Lil Wayne doesn't curse.
Well, because his mom wouldn't let him.
No, so but then when he turns 18, just goes apeshit, and it's just so much cursing involved. I remember Baby was like, I remember me and Baby sat in the studio, and he's like, I want this kid to be great. I think this kid has the potential to be great. What do I do in order for him to achieve that greatness?
Yeah.
And I told him point blank, you have to make his life revolve around the studio. Whatever it is he wants to indulge in, he has to indulge in it at the studio, right? If he wants girls, bring him to the studio. If he's old enough now, if he wants weed, he wants liquor, bring him to the studio, right? So that when he leaves the studio, he feels funny. He feels foreign. He feels out of place. And the only place that he feels comfortable is in the studio.
So, all right, so you saw
that's like super manipulative, by the way. that's like,
but I mean, that's how you
Pavlovian. That's like every time you like, you know, go to the studio, you get a girl. It's like
I fuck around and get Svengali sometimes.
Yeah, you know. Jesus. And look what happened. So you saw the breakup of Manny and Baby, and now years later,
I watched every split. Yeah. I watch every split within Cash Money. I watch every split in hip hop.
Sure.
You know?
But like being there and certainly at the beginning of Manny and Baby and at the beginning of Wayne and Baby, how does that make you feel just as a friend, as a fan, as a person who understands this culture when those business relationships take over for what is really an emotional art?
Yeah, I mean, it gets, like I said, you don't want to work for your friends. You know, because when business goes sour, the friendship goes sour, right? And if I'm your friend and I'm married and you're married, our wives are friends. If you got kids and I got kids, our kids are friends. Right. You know, we see each other most artists work in the holiday season. And, you know, so we're on the road. If it's Thanksgiving and there's a show, we got to all eat Thanksgiving dinner. It gets very, very deep, right? So it's rough. I mean, it's rougher for them. For me, I'm on the outside looking in. I'm like, that's fucked up, but it's rougher for them because I'm still friends with everybody. So I see the toll that it takes on everybody involved, you know, like it hurt Manny, you know, and it hurt Baby on a certain level. It was just, you know, how do we work this shit out so that we're all cool? And I always tell people, you know, as you just keep it internal as long as possible, right? Because if you look at every split that ever happened in hip hop, they all reconcile at some point, right?
Right.
And that's always the regret is that we would have kept this between us. I wish that I wouldn't have did that. I wouldn't have done that interview. I wish you wouldn't have made that song. Yeah. You know, we should have been more grown about it, right? When I have a certain quality of life that I worked to achieve, and I'm, you know, I put in the work that deems me being paid a certain amount of money, and I don't get paid that amount of money, especially by people who assured me, you know, outside of this ain't just business, it's, you know, and sometimes, right, there's things that happen under the table that everybody doesn't know about with record companies. Somebody needs to get a cousin out of jail. Somebody needs taxes paid. There's some CEOs that go far beyond their obligation, right? I know Jay Prince has done it for his artists, right? I know that DNY have done it for their artists. I know that JD did it for – everybody does it for their artists. You know what I'm saying? So that becomes a very – but it's not in writing, right? And so that becomes a slippery slope, right? And it's hard to introduce sometimes that kind of shit into a court of law because ain't no telling where that money came from sometimes. That brown bag money puts us both on blast with the IRS. So that shit's a whole slippery slope. So it's just, and it's, like I said, it's really hard to watch that stuff happen. I was very lucky that, you know, we only had a two-man group and that we didn't get into it to get rich. We got into it to make music, and money never became an issue for me and Pimp, even though if UGK did a song, Pimp owned 75% of it because he's doing the beat, so that's 50, and then he's rapping on half of it with me, so that's 25%.
Yep.
But I was never an issue for us. He was doing more work. He's supposed to get more fucking money.
Yeah.
I'm not sitting in the studio. I go in the studio, lay my verse 45 minutes. I'm gone. They got to sit there, track that shit out. Listen to the snare for 5 fucking hours. Listen to the bass line for 5 fucking hours.
Did you ever
come
in and be like, I don't like that hi-hat?
Never. That's the one thing we never did is argue in the studio. I knew my place. As far as the music goes, I defer 100% to you. Just tell me where the fuck I would literally be asleep Yeah. Like Murder, I would sleep before I laid Murder. I would sleep under the board in the studio because they were mixed. They were tracking it out, and it was like we were. Riding Dirty was one of the first hip hop albums recorded in Pro Tools. I don't think a lot of people know that.
I didn't know that.
A lot of people don't know that. Riding Dirty was one of the first albums completely recorded in Pro Tools, and everybody was getting new to it. So it's like Utz, it's N.O.J.O., it's Mike Dean,
yeah,
this guy Skip, all of these different creative minds trying to figure out how to apply this technology to rap music, you know. So I'm asleep. They're sitting there, and then they wake me up. It's like it's time to rap, and I get up. You know, I go in. I do my three takes. I go back to sleep. I don't have shit to do. But meanwhile, he's there living with this record, listening to it 200 fucking times before we even turned it into the record company. He's supposed to get more money like that. So it was never – we didn't like the same kind of women. Mm-hmm. We didn't live the same kind of lifestyles. So we never had any problems. Mm-hmm. We were literally the back and the front of a hand.
Yeah.
I feel like you and Pimp had the same sort of recording relationship as Eric and I have, by the way.
I think so.
Well –
I mean, we recorded in the house.
Oh, no, I meant that, like, I sleep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's actually true, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm very much, yeah, with Mayo as we make the beats.
I would have pegged him as the sleeper, actually.
What?
Yes.
That's very generous of you.
I would have pegged him as the sleeper.
No. Yeah, no. Eric is the hard worker.
Because you're the tall one, so it seems like you would be the athletic one outside, you know, dunking on. Just out like, here in Harlem dunking on motherfuckers,
right? Yeah,
now
you're just, like, outright lying.
No, but see, Bun knows who to call when he needs to, like, get something taken care of.
Yeah, he calls you.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
This is very, very fucking true.
When we went down to Houston for the Girls with the Dirty South's music video, we shot it, I don't remember the name of the town, but it's right by where Mike Dean lived.
Yeah, yeah, we were literally right, maybe a half a mile away from where the majority, well, I won't say the majority, where the biggest Rap-A-Lot records were recorded.
Crazy.
Absolutely. It was an amazing thing to go over there and just be able to watch it. Like, when I would have to go and do a verse, there was always somebody else, like, in recording. And it was like this. So it's like literally 2-3 different albums being recorded at the same time. So it's like, I got to come in. I got to do my verse for your album. Then I got to do my song for my album. Then the guy that I did the verse with has to come in and record his shit. And I'm just there watching it because all I'm doing is featuring. I'm not a Rap-A-Lot artist at this time.
Right.
So I'm just there. And then meanwhile, the dog's eating through the wall. Like, Mike was, you know, it was, we were all very young. We were wild. I was smoking Fry back then. Mm-hmm. I know Mike was into a lot of different things at the time.
Right.
So we were very... We were being extremely creative, but also it was a very volatile environment.
But, okay, so, I mean, it's not like you're in Houston. You're 45 minutes out of the way.
Yeah, yeah, you're in the sticks. And that kind of shit we were doing, it wasn't allowed in the city
No,
limits.
But your neighbors aren't, like, for a while, right? Like,
yeah. Well, Mike actually lived in a neighborhood that was not, like, Mike had a really nice house. Mike had a big house for a lot of people. But... His neighbors were right there. Like, he didn't have, like, a bunch of land separating them.
Really?
So, yeah, no, and there was literally 24-hour traffic at that house.
Wait.
I never knew when Mike slept.
Well, so, yeah. It was probably when you were sleeping.
I guess so. When we were asleep. Pause.
Yeah, pause. But, okay, so a dog chews through the wall. You can see another house?
No, you see another room.
Okay. So it wasn't like chewing to the outside of the house.
Yeah, no. He's like,
they're aggressive
he's
dogs.
Like, he's like in the den area, mm-hmm. chewing through the wall, like separating. Like, say if you got like a den that's connected to the kitchen, and maybe, mm-hmm. you know, there's maybe, I don't know, maybe somewhere where plants sit or vases sit or mm-hmm. somewhere. Just some
this is
kind
definitely
of
not a home renovation podcast.
No, not, I don't know how to phrase that shit at all. Oh, a shelf.
Yeah.
But no, and then the fucking dog. Every now and then you see the fucking dog scratching and shit. And every now and then you see like kind of like, I'm like, what is the dog doing? And then every time you would go.
Was the dog
like, the hole would get bigger. I would not be surprised if that dog got a hold of some shit and licked up something or. I went to a producer's house who will not be named.
Okay.
To record a song one night after, like, I had never met him before. Super, super guy. Really nice guy.
Mm-hmm. Sarzak.
And he's like, yo, I like you. I've always liked you as an artist. I'd love to do a song with you. We're going to the house. Come to the house if you want to do a record. I'm like, sure, I'll go. And literally was like, you know, give me a pen and pad. And everything I picked up had residue on it, like powder.
Sure.
Either coke or a pill. And then when the huffing started happening mm-hmm. in this studio session, and then the God, what is the fucking thing where they put the thing in the thing and they...
The balloon?
Is that... No, no, the aerosol.
Oh. Oh, they were doing that?
That's like
a Whippets?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. That's like... And
I tried to give the song back. Like, I was like, I don't want a part of this. To be fair, they had girls, and the girls, if they were legal, maybe it had to have been their birthday. If they were 18, they just turned 18 that
day. Did you
wish
them a happy birthday?
No, no, no. I wished them a happy, get the hell out of my way. I'm on my way out of here. I just really felt like I was in Babylon.
Wow. Remember when MTV came down to Houston and were like, hey, Houston's on the map, and they're like a real thing now, and they made it a big thing. They went to St. Louis.
They went to Oakland.
Yeah.
It was the block, right?
Yeah, the block.
It was the block.
So they come down.
They found you.
How do you feel about that? Because you've been like, hey, this has been my entire life. Like, welcome.
I don't knock it because, you know, even if I felt a certain way about it, it was still going to benefit the younger guys.
Sure.
Right? And I didn't want to get in the way of that. I was always of the mind frame that the originators, once people started saying, man, you guys created something, you're an original, I was like, okay, so other people are going to get rich off of this and I won't.
Right.
Because that's the cycle. You see it in life. And
unless you jump on a Macklemore song in 2015.
Right. So I accepted that, right? So I didn't have any issues watching guys get rich around me.
Okay.
Right? I was very comfortable in my skin.
Then on top of that, and there was a time, by the way, where...
Not that I'm doing bad or anything.
No, of course,
you know, I'm far from destitute. But.
But it gave other people an opportunity where maybe it hadn't before. And so there was a time for Paul Wall and Chameleon Air and Slim Thug to really like get out and become more national.
Absolutely.
Why 10 years later has there not really been a standout Texas artist in the last 10 years to really go national?
Well, because a lot of the artists that came out in that time, they're kind of connected to a sound and a movement.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it's connected to Screw, and Screw isn't here anymore.
Right.
And then the other side of that was that Screw created something, but he didn't set out to create something, right? And it got very big, right? But Screw was not the guy that wanted to monetize it in that sense. So Screw could have started a record company and put out Little Kiki and ESG and all these guys, but he didn't. He didn't want to hold these guys back. He didn't want to be the guy to get called 4 or 5 in the morning talking about where's my money type shit, right? So he just let a lot of guys live, and he just wanted to make good music. And I think that's... Unfortunately, that had a lot to do with it because you had a lot of MCs that had only had direction up to that level, and then Screw wasn't really in a position to offer them like music industry advice or mentorship.
Hmm.
So a lot of those guys, they didn't really have anybody to go to teach them. So once they got to a certain level, like for you look at the Swisher House, all the artists in the Swisher House got bigger than Michael Watts.
Yeah.
Right? So then they're kind of leading the ship at that point. So if it isn't for a G Dash, then a lot of that stuff maybe falls apart even earlier than that. You know? So and if it had been a Screw record company that all these guys were signed to and then Screw passes away, that becomes a big fuck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a big bunch of shit. You know? So it was a blessing and a curse, I think, for a lot of guys. UGK actually was able to carve out a musical identity outside of that, so we're not beholden to that. But I think a lot of guys get stuck in that. And then if you're an artist and you don't necessarily carry music from Houston, if you're from Houston, rather, and you're an artist and your music isn't overtly Houston, right, then what happens, right? Look at Travis Scott. He's incredibly successful, incredibly talented. He's from Houston, but his music doesn't come off as Houston music, and so he doesn't get associated to Houston at all. I mean, one of the most popular artists in the world right now is a Houston rapper.
No, you're right.
Right? He's been behind the scenes for the guy that's arguably the most popular rapper of our time right now.
Yep.
He's been extremely, you know...
the guy who produced Zarnock?
No,
it's Zarnock.
He's made considerable contributions to it, right? But Houston doesn't get the credit,
right?
So that's what happens with that. That's the problem. We still have great talent, but the city of Houston doesn't get the credit for creating the talent if the talent decides not to sound like they're from Houston.
Right.
Houston got a lot of credit for songs that New York was making. So there's that.
That is true.
We still do. I mean, look. In the same way that, look, New York started hip hop. So all the hip hop that wasn't from New York carried bits of hip hop, right? LA had their spin.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have regions who look like or sound like or maybe feel more like LA artists and East Coast artists. And then that music becomes what influences a generation. And then we come and we're just another natural part of the cycle.
Yeah.
Of the hip hop cycle of contributing. So in the same way that a Southern artist in the 80s or the early 90s would maybe carry East Coast overtones because of the influence. In 2015, you have East Coast artists or West Coast artists or whatever who carry these Southern overtones because of the music that they were influenced by.
Mm-hmm.
So it's perfectly natural that at some point an ASAP Rocky happens, right? It's perfectly natural that, you know, you have this screwed up sound in music. But it's also, you know, that you have guys like a Dope Beezy who is extremely lyrical, right? That's absolutely East Coast. Well, he says I influence him too, but my lyricism is absolutely East Coast influence, right?
EPMD. Because,
you know, so, well, I wouldn't call EPMD lyrical.
Okay.
For me, I was talking about this last night. I think Lord Finesse was a big influence on me as a rapper. Cool G Rap. I wanted to be known as a rapper. Like, I could rap good.
Yeah.
Pimp wanted to be known as a player, right? I know how to play this game, right? Mm-hmm. I don't have to be the best rapper to get more out of rap than you. I just know how to work this thing.
Hmm.
And I think that kind of worked for us.
Yeah.
We never wanted the same thing at the same time. So there were times when we were younger, he was all about business. I was a wild dude smoking formaldehyde and out here starting fights and ride around with sawed-off shotguns and shit. And then Big Pimpin' happened. I realized that there was about to be a shift, and there was going to be a lot of, it might be time to stop smoking formaldehyde, and there's real business opportunities, and we're about to be in different rooms with different people, and I want to make sure I got a clear mind when I walk in these rooms so that we don't misrepresent ourselves. And then he went apeshit.
But then when you walk into those rooms, you still bring a sawed off, right?
Well, yeah, eventually. Like, Pimp would walk in, kind of like talk shit, curse people out, and I'm the guy like up against the wall with the trench coat. It's not showing anything, but it's obvious I didn't wear a trench coat in June.
Right.
Because I had a day coat, a chest coat.
It was your Rosewood movement.
You know it, man. I was all about that back then. We came very close to setting loose 100 rats in Jive Records. Very, very close.
Setting loose 100 rats in Jive Records.
Very close.
It's almost like...
First of all, where would you get 100 rats? You just go into the subway and just be like,
what, in New York?
Yeah, I mean, like,
turn left or right.
But like, you have to put in
Dunkin' Donuts.
That feels like a very labor intensive way to
get revenge.
Yeah. It's actually not as hard to get 100 rats in New York City on a day's notice.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Right.
As you would think.
I forgot that there was time involved. Yeah. That's
as you would think, but no, it's. I realized that wasn't going to be the way to work that.
When was the last time you heard something that you spit that you were like, oh, I had totally forgotten about that?
That's a good question. I hear shit just on iTunes the other day. I just was looking at all the music that they had for sale that I was attached to.
Mm-hmm.
And like easily out of the first 10 results, the 5, I had no idea.
Really?
Because I do a lot of records that never come out. I've done so many records with people that never come out.
Well, what's one?
Oh, God. Remember Dirty South by Goody Mop?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a UGK Dirty South remix that never came out.
Who owns that, them?
It's maybe Rico Wade has that somewhere.
Wow.
But we've done a lot of records. And then it's like, I do a lot of independent records that are funded.
We can get some, make this go viral.
Oh, it's funny. That's funny. No, but I do a lot of records with these guys with, you know, questionable funding.
Mm-hmm.
And then before the shit even comes out, studios get raided, motherfuckers go to jail, songs just end up in fucking...
So you never get paid that questionable money?
No, I didn't get paid any questionable money at all.
Well, no.
That's what I'm supposed to say, right, Charles? Yeah.
Brown bag money.
Yeah. But we don't admit to
but
brown
there's
bag
gotta be
money.
Songs, there's got to be songs that show up on mixtapes, too, that you're just like, oh, I remember that happened, right?
Well, I mean, for example, I'm Going In, right?
Yeah.
That was my record.
How does it end up not your record?
It got leaked. Jeezy rapped to it on a freestyle and ended up going on his album.
Huh. Do you remember, this is one that comes to
the
mind.
The other one, Tell Me, was really good.
Yeah.
That was my record.
Drake.
Yeah. No, I got it. Thank you. But once again, how does that happen?
Records. How did that happen? There was two versions of it and one got out. I had an alternate version.
Mm-hmm.
And So that's how it's like, Drake, you got him right. That's how I end up on that, because there's a version where I'm the next first. And
all right, here's
so that
one.
Was technically the time that you guys rapped together.
Technically.
Yeah.
Here's one that I just want to throw out there. This is the most.
We're not going
to
keep getting technical,
find.
Are we? Because I'm not going to.
This is very technical.
This is the most random one I can find. I just want to know if you remember this.
Asylum Records, baby. Hot right, hot to death. You know I'm talking about Southern Smoke.
God, Southern Smoke. My nigga Paul Wall.
I might start rapping along.
So you know what? I listened to that Drama mixtape. That Drama Legends mixtape. I didn't recognize any of that shit.
Really?
Yes.
You have a really good verse on this one. Right, hotter than. You can just call me the hot man. Don't need front like hot ain't hot man. You ever heard somebody say something dumb like that?
That's the guy you're rapping with.
I'll get to your verse. Don't need front like hot ain't hot man. Real quick, it has you, Webby, Hot Right. Paul Wall might be on this too. But we'll get to your verse because you closed it out.
Oh yeah, sorry, stop. I have no idea what I said.
These niggas gon' make me laugh, and I don't even feel like it. King of the underground, ain't another nigga trill like it. Load up the horses,
no friend
load up the posse, cause I'ma leave your punch drunk like a fifth of Rossi. You're violating, man, crossing the line. Bust him up with the Beretta, then I'm tossing the nine. You can play with your kids, play with your wife, or play with UGK and bitch, you're playing with your life. I don't back down, I hesitate when I pop niggas. There ain't no room to negotiate, you getting dropped, nigga. Pull your roll and get your bitch ass stopped, nigga. You're bottoming out, I see you at the top, nigga. Now man up, bitch, you said you was a G, but you won't make a fit. You're shaking at the knee, free pimp to the seat. Quit acting like a
motherfucker. Oh, that was that time, right. Okay. Back then I was just, see, I said free pimp C on it. So I was just blackout rapping back then.
Yeah?
I was like rapping on anything at that point, like whatever.
You were rapping on a Hot Right track?
I had to. Mm-hmm. I had to say Free Pimp C.
Didn't we meet just DJ Small somewhere?
Then. Yeah.
Yeah. Like at SOBs or something like that?
Yeah.
Really short guy.
Really short.
Really, really short. The most accurate name in hip hop.
Now he's like
very persistent.
He's
too.
Doing
very
videos.
Persistent.
Yeah.
Really.
He's doing videos like DJ Vlad. Like he'll do really. Like interviews with like people.
It's amazing to watch guys that you would literally be like, oh, this guy's got great work ethic, but he's never going to make it, right? You sit there and watch Smalls, like, you know, I cut for him. I did mixtapes, work with him, everything. I was like, man, I don't think people are going to get it. And that fucker's still here, outlasted pretty much everybody else. Yeah. It's him, Drama, and Vlad now, really, like, on that, trying to go out to that level. Like, Drama's the voice for radio in Houston.
Yeah.
Like, basically the radio voice for all iHeartRadio shit now, right?
I thought Debbie Deb was.
No. Just for the hair commercials and insurance.
And Hard Knocks.
I've been hearing Angela Yee in Houston on radio for no fucking reason.
Like, yeah, all Breakfast Club.
For hair shops.
They're doing. They do local commercials?
They do local.
Have you done any good local commercials?
I don't get that kind of work. It usually goes to the Breakfast Club or J.J. Watt.
Jay.
So I don't get that kind of work. But it's coming.
You had like Buns Minute or whatever.
Well, Buns Beat. I had the toothpaste commercial.
You had the toothpaste commercial?
Yes.
What is the toothpaste commercial?
I did a Rembrandt toothpaste commercial.
You do have a nice smile, but like...
this 9 out of 10 dentists.
This isn't a video podcast. Why the fuck am I cheesing? But no, yeah, there's a Rembrandt. It's a viral video, and it's me.
Oh, I do. Yeah, this is recent.
Yeah, it's me. It's Kristen, the Asian girl, the chef. She's got like a new show.
From Top Chef.
Right. And the girl, I think her name is Sanaa. I can't remember her name.
Sanaa Lathan.
No. not the rapper girl. She's the highest ranked woman in Marvel. I think she did Captain Marvel too as well. But
yeah, wrong.
Halle Berry.
We all have Storm. Yeah, sure, whatever. We all have great smiles. So that's what it was about. They actually paid me a couple of grand to talk about how I have a great smile.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Chicken was actually pretty good.
Oh, thank you.
I'm not gonna say couscous was good. It's all just, right. There's just a pause in there. That was some good couscous.
What Can you talk about your relationship with J.J. Watt? He seems like a good guy, right?
So J.J. Watt had a Nike contract prior to the Reebok contract he has now.
Yeah.
So I hit him up. I'm like, yo, I can't wait to buy these fucking shoes you got. He was like, don't buy them. I'm going to get you a pair. Don't worry about it. So maybe a month later, I'm sitting in my house, literally T-shirt, underwear, doorbell rings. I go up, look out the window. It's J.J. Watt. I go back. I put on some shorts. I'm totally caught off guard. Open the door, and we're talking. He's got the shoes, like I told you. I was going. We lived in the same neighborhood, so yeah, we knew where each other lived. So we're sitting there talking. My dog runs out the door. I totally forgot the dog's out walking around the house. I got left the door open. We're talking. Dog runs out the front door. Guy hands me the shoes, says, hold this. Jumps in his truck, drives down the street, jumps out the truck, down the alley by the bayou, comes back 2 minutes later holding my dog. J.J. Watt is Superman.
He's I was just going to say,
Superman. He is Clark Kent. He is literally, I've never met a person that I can call All-American.
There was,
he's fucking All-American.
There was
he
a,
is. He smells like apple pie.
There was a part.
How come your dog wasn't like chewing through a wall?
My dog doesn't have to eat the things that Mike Dean's dog had to eat.
In Hard Knocks, in maybe like the second episode or something, there was a montage of his workday on the field, and he was the last man. He might have been the first guy there, and then the last man to leave. And he's there taking football shot from like the jugs machine. Closer and closer and closer, like one-handed. And then after that, when all the fans are there, he's still running and like signing every autograph and shaking hands and taking pictures.
But isn't that the same mentality as like Kobe? Maybe not the signing stuff.
I think Kobe Bryant might be the most honest athlete we have, right? He's honest enough to admit that I don't care about having a relationship with my teammates. I just want to win games, right? We can be friends in the fucking off season if it's even necessary for us to be friends. But if, at the very least, we should all be dedicating ourselves to fucking winning. And Kobe Bryant is probably the last of that era that didn't give a fuck about making friends with guys on other teams. Also, you have to look into it. Something that somebody had to bring to my attention. AAU changed the way that these players know each other, right?
Yeah.
So these guys grow up playing with each other for years in AAU games. Then they go to college together. So by the time they get to pros, they're old friends. You know what I'm saying? So as opposed to guys that came in, have these college rivalries, which we don't, that's another aspect. We don't have guys that stay in colleges 2, 3, 4 years. Right. So we don't watch. We will see Duke play UNC, but it won't be like watching those guys, certain players play every year. I can't wait to see Akeem play this guy again. You know, we don't have that anymore because guys don't stay with teams throughout 4 years of college. So it's just guys know it, it's just a friendlier game of basketball than we're used to. And because it's not a violent, inherently violent sport, and
well, you didn't see the Knicks beat up the
that's exclusive to the Knicks. It's got nothing to do with sports in general. But it doesn't really exist like that. So that's why the dynamic, I guess, in NBA, other than as opposed to a lot of these other ones, is different. Because in NFL, we still got to fucking run into each other and hit each other. And in baseball, it's guys come from high school, guys come from college, guys come from other countries. So there's no real friendships in that sense like that.
I don't have any good Hakeem Olajuwon stories because I didn't grow up in Houston, but I'm assuming that you might.
I don't really.
Anybody from that era?
Clyde Drexler,
all the good, Vernon Maxwell.
Vernon Maxwell.
Vernon Maxwell is the guy. That if that's the kind of thing you're looking for, Vernon Maxwell was the guy. Vernon Maxwell had the panic room in his house.
Really?
In the 80s, like on some so if you got a panic room in the 80s, you're not hiding from someone. You're hiding stuff from someone. But yeah, Vernon was into a lot of different crazy, wild shit. And it was really fun watching those guys. And Sam Cassell too was actually. Sam was the city guy. Like, Sam was the guy that you saw in the clubs, out with the people. Those were really fun times watching those guys. Actually, my sister-in-law, because Sam was the one that, after Houston Rockets have just won the NBA Finals, what are you going to do? I'm going to fucking Disneyland. And he took my sister-in-law. So she got to ride on the jet and do the whole thing. Like, that was pretty cool.
Can we all agree that, like Sam, I Cassell might be the worst line ever?
Yeah. I actually said, because Sam Cassell almost ran me over one night in his Range Rover.
Really?
And I put it in Break You Off Something. I said, I'm coming down like Cassell in that goddamn Rover. Because we talked about that shit all the time. Like, man, remember you almost killed me? Like legitimately. Like, literally, like.
What the fuck? Was that Sam Cassell?
What club was that? Infinity? That's how long ago? That was years ago.
I once saw Stephon Marbury open his car door and then spit at my car and then drive off.
So that's nice.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
That's my NBA.
It's another sane person.
Yeah.
You were never supposed to wash your car again.
Yeah. Yeah. I need Stephon Marbury.
You had Marbury spit on your car. You know what that's worth in China right now?
Yeah. What can you tell us about TV Johnny?
TV Johnny is a very, very good person. like outside of all the jewelry and every whatever. Yeah. TV Johnny invites me to every birthday party. TV Johnny invites me to every special moment in his life. I remember he had a birthday party where his parents were there, and his parents, he talked about his dad was there talking about breaking out of fucking Vietnamese prison and how hard they fought to get him here, and you know how hard he fought to make a living and carve out. It was just incredible to hear TV Johnny's story. We just see the little funny Asian guy with all the jewelry on. That dude had a fucking, his whole, it's amazing that they've been able to achieve what they've been able to achieve. And he's always like, Bumby, we have golf tournament. I want you, my golf tournament. Please bring the wife. You know, Bumby, we have birthday party. Big, you know, but not a lot of people. But we want, he's just so, he's a good person. TV Johnny has helped everybody.
That's awesome.
I think at one point or another. And
did you know him
really
before he connected with Paul?
No. Okay. Just kind of all met him at the same time. And just Paul just ended up carving out their relationship with him.
That's awesome.
But he's such a, and I know all the jury guys, and they're all great people, but TV Johnny is just a really, really nice guy. I've never seen him sad. But I guess if you got the kind of money TV Johnny has, you got no reason to be sad at all.
Did you ever get into grills?
I had a grill.
Did you?
Yeah, TV Johnny. I mean, he did it for free.
Yeah.
Just like, I want to give you a grill. He's like, I know you're not going to buy one. So if I want to see you in a TV Johnny grill, I got to make you one. So I went, fucking Paul.
Did you do tops and bottoms? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man.
What was it?
Do you still have them?
I think they're in my jewelry box somewhere.
Wow. That was, it's.
I never felt comfortable. Well, never. All that shit. Like, I just the amount of saliva that builds up from having gold grills.
What if you had it implanted like Kanye does?
That's, I don't know.
That's just like next level shit.
If you're going to do that, just get veneers and just be done with it. Just be done with it.
Oh, right. You're a Rembrandt guy. You can't, yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm not allowed.
Is there any chance that, and I know people have asked you like a million times, but I feel like of anyone within the hip-hop community, like you are very well suited to become a politician if Fox News doesn't dig up your 16-year-old, you know, verses.
That's fine. But I think people are over that. I think people are really kind of over that. My career would be of no hindrance to me winning a political election in at least the city of Houston, if not the state of Texas. I don't, if that's something I wanted to do, I think I've done enough beyond maybe a couple of controversial verses or whatever. I've done more than enough to kind of balance that type of shit out. And if you got to reach back 25 years to something I said or I thought or felt when I was 18 or 19, when I was high on drugs, as a way to define me as a man, a husband, and a grandfather in 2015, you're just fucking reaching, dog.
But isn't that like, that is what Fox News does.
I mean, that's what the media does in general, right? Mm-hmm. Like, conservative media is going to find dirt on people and, you know, vice versa. That's just kind of how that works, you know? But most of my shit's out there already. So I figure, you know, you write a tell-all and put it out there, and then you can kind of play it how you want. But, I mean, it's...
But you have
no
aspirations to go into politics?
It's different, right? Because when you do... everything that you do affects everyone around you, right? So if I decide I want to run for politics, then my family runs for politics, right? So not only do they try to drag me through the mud, they're going to try to find every instance to drag my wife through the mud, my daughter, my son, anybody associated with me. They're going to try to tear them down in one form or another. And I just wouldn't want to put that kind of pressure on the people I love. That's a lot to ask, you know? And it's not my first love, right? Like, I could see if I was a political science major and I was always involved in that kind of stuff and had a law degree and was in that world, right? And the search for justice and something like that, then it's different. And because then the woman that you marry understands that, the children you raise understand that, and the family's a little bit more prepared for the sacrifice that it takes to get there, but they're willing to support the father because they or the mother, whoever, because they know that's what they really want to do, right? That's not really what I really want to do. People think I'd be good at it, but I don't know. It's just something you don't just be married. You don't just decide to run. That's something you really have to want to do that, right? Because there's opportunities to really affect people's lives. I talked to I think his name is Kasim Reed in Atlanta. I'm trying to think of it. The mayor's name in Atlanta. And I talked to him when the Outkast did the three days in the park. And I asked him, like, what's it like being mayor? I was like, you know, there's there's conversations being had, and they're doing polls and shit, and checking the temperature, so to speak, of the city as to whether or not I would have a legitimate run at mayor. And I was like, what's it like being a mayor? He's like, there's a lot of bullshit that you have to deal with, right? Being mayor means that you have to shake hands and sit across from people that you probably really don't want to fuck with. Mm-hmm. He says, but also being mayor means that every now and then, when that letter comes in about the old lady whose street's fucked up and her yard is shitty and all this kind of stuff, and you can actually send somebody over there and fucking fix that shit and help somebody. It's like those little moments make dealing with all these assholes worth it. He's like, so if you really want to do it, it's like, don't worry about the stuff that you're not going to like. Just remind yourself that you can help people, right? And if you go into it thinking like that, that's kind of the term you'll have.
Yeah, you know, again, from an outsider's perspective, I feel like if there's anyone built for that, it could be you.
I've built myself for leadership positions, right? Exactly. Like I've been working towards that. So I don't know where that goes, you know? And that ain't an easy job either.
No.
You know, that's not an easy fucking job. So I commend the mayor. Our mayor is cool as shit, right? And if I wanted to be a mayor, like, that's the lead I would take. Our mayor has improved the quality of living as much as she possibly could. She's definitely raised the awareness of arts and culture and you know, she's trying. And that's really all you can do in those positions when you're in politics is try. So I feel like you can get a lot more done outside of it than inside. So.
And talk about sitting across from people you may not like. You've dealt with a lot of record executives.
I mean, shit. Just pretty much, that's pretty much all you do is sit across from people you don't like. But, I mean, that's, you know, doing the music, everybody understood what that was going to be going in. Politics is a little bit different. Today, I couldn't say that. I've already made a commitment to support a candidate going into the next election anyway. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, who's to say 8, 9, 10 years down the line, maybe my grandkids are a little older. My wife gets a little older and gets a little bit more of that I don't give a shit attitude, as old people tend to do.
Sure.
Stop caring about what people say or whatever. Who knows, man? If I feel the city needs me, I'll go for it. I don't think the city needs me to be as mayor. I think we have a very competent mayor now.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have a person that, you know, competent enough to do her job when she's done. But if the next round of guys come around and they're full of shit, I might have to just on general purpose. fuck winning. Somebody's just got to take a stand sometimes.
I do like how we started this podcast, you know, talking about like basically a waste of time, you know, normal stuff. And now we're getting into like meet the press territory.
This is because this is where you guys are going to be eventually. I am looking at the George Stephanopoulos's of hip hop.
That's more this week on ABC, but you know.
He did go to our elementary school for a couple of years.
Yeah, he's like the most famous alumni from Purchase Elementary School.
Shout out to Purchase.
Yeah,
we do need to mention Gumball because we had
Luke just woke up.
We had Alchemist on the podcast, and I don't know if we got deep into it for that episode, but we did talk to him like off the air about it and how much he was looking forward to doing it, and we've known how much you've loved. How much it really changed your life.
A lot of people don't know what Gumball is, probably. So Gumball is...
Gumball 3000, it's a car rally. It consists of driving 3,000 miles. We like to say 7 days, but really the first day is registration. So it's really, honestly, it's 3,000 miles in 6 days.
Which is a lot.
Yeah, we average about anywhere from 450 to 550 a day. Yeah. So some days we'll only do maybe 340, 350, and some days we'll do like 700 miles, 800 miles in a day.
And when you're driving 30 miles an hour, it's just like, it just drags.
Yeah, I mean, well, every now and then you'll get behind a mule-drawn carriage and the outskirts of Turkey. But, I mean, we have fun. People think it's just a bunch of rich people driving around in cars. And
they're right.
Well, I mean, they're not broke. Right? But they're not broke, but...
You've shown us pictures that they've sent you of, like, actual car grills turned into desks.
Yeah. So, okay, so they are rich guys, right? And they are driving around in cars, right? But that's not what it's really about, right? Because I can show you the pictures of the cars and the parties and all of that, but it's about, like, if you're in a car with guys for 8 hours, right, we're going to talk about everything.
Right.
And that's what happens. It's really more of a bonding experience than anything else. The way it even came together was the creator, Maximilian Cooper, was like, I got friends that are models. I have friends that are musicians. I have friends that are ours. Well, this is prior to Eve. But he's like, I'm thinking I have all these cool friends, right? But they don't know each other. I know them, but they don't know each other. How can I get all these people who I'm sure would love each other if they met each other all together? Like, how do I convince them to all hang out? And it was like, hey, let's take our nice cars and drive around the country for a couple of days and see what happens. And so it started with, like, you know, a few undesirable people and like Naomi Campbell and, you know,
Naomi Campbell was
like that.
Naomi's making that 8-hour a day trip.
Well, it wasn't as extensive as it is now. Oh. Right. So
how many windows did she break?
That's a good question.
Thank you.
That's a good question. I bet she can break your windows anytime, my friend.
That's what she said. all right. So no names. You said there are some crazy stories that you hear on these gumball trips. What's the craziest story you've heard without like any like details that would incriminate
people? No. There was a guy this year that showed up the one morning on the grid, beat up basically. And like, who beat you up? And he basically tried to tell this story that he had gotten kidnapped and tied up and put in the closet and had to fight his way out and all that. But over the next couple of days, we kind of watched him and his mannerisms. And he was pretty much just a dickhead, an asshole. And we just all assumed somebody just put some hands on him at some point.
And that guy is Alchemist. Well, do you drive?
I drive, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Sure.
Heavy foot? That silence says a lot.
Charles, you want to tell that story?
There was a time I crossed 5 lanes of a highway in front of an 18-wheeler trying to stay behind him. He actually then drove on the shoulder for a bit, exited, and then right before we exited, he realized he didn't want to go there and drove through the grass to get back on the highway. And my co-pilot's just sitting there, moon-eyed, freaking out. And this guy's just acting like, I call him on the phone, like, what the fuck? I was thinking about getting a burger, but then I was like, oh, fuck you.
Are you trying to get killed?
I know. Wait. And you think Sam Cassell is a poor driver?
That was a very... That was, out of all the driving, that was...
That was the worst.
That was the worst. That's about as bad as... That's not all I do, but I... When I want a burger, man, I want a fucking burger.
Apparently.
5 lanes of traffic and 18-wheelers and grass don't stop me, dog.
You have any good titty boy stories? Because if there's anyone who seems like the next most genuine person next to you, he seems like that guy.
It was obvious that one way or another, Titty was going to win. He was so different from everything that was happening, specifically in that camp, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was so different from everything, right? But the talent was there, was recognized. But I will say, he has always been a dresser.
Yeah.
He has always been like, clothes first. I'm finna be fresh. He was a duffel bag boy of that shit. He was always, remember getting out the helicopter with the fucking shark skin suit one time at his birthday party. It's always been that, but he's so smart.
Yeah.
Like, that's one thing you can talk. You can talk to Titty about anything. Like, you can actually have a conversation with him about almost anything. It's really cool. Guys, I hate to keep going, but I got a Yankees Astros game to get to.
Right.
Yeah, shout out to Dan for the link.
Bun, we obviously appreciate you coming through.
I do want to, you know, send prayers up for CeCe, though. I really want
to see CeCe
win, because I feel like shit, because I literally was like calling CeCe all weekend for tickets and fucking finding out yesterday. I feel like an asshole for bothering that guy. I had no idea that was going on with him.
But, yeah, I mean, look.
But, I mean, if you're going to go to Yankees, I mean, and it's always been like, hey, man, if you ever want to come. Because we know each other through Jordan Brand or whatever.
Sure.
You know. Yeah. So it's always like, man, anytime you want to come to a game. You know, I met him at a fucking Nets game. He's like, man, come see me pitch. And
that's dope.
I'm fucking calling him, and the dude's going through one of the worst times in his life. And I'm asking him for fucking baseball tickets.
But meanwhile,
what?
Your connect is through, it's the real, so.
Well, it's okay to do douchey things with douchey people.
thanks, man.
Thank you guys, man. We'll be right back.